Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. We've got a full house today, right? Don't we, Mike?
Full house of neat folks. Yes, Mike Cosentino's over here on Democratic Perspective. Yes, we have, as often we do, we get these wonderful candidates.
We really have excellent candidates this year.
And Karen. We have great candidates and Karen this morning.
So we have the head of the Democrats of the Red Rock, which is a supporter of our show. But also we wanted to talk about a little bit about with Karen. Maybe we'd start off with that just for a couple of seconds. Karen, we have two candidates here. Let's introduce the candidates and tell us what Gore does, how you organize to support him.
Yes. We got David Brill is running.
Been on the show before.
Absolutely. He's running against Paul Gosar for CD4.
Crazy Paul.
Yes, I have a stack of wacko correspondence from Paul that I'm saving for a book. We have Mark Horton. Mark, do you use all three names?
I do, and they've been calling me all types of other names on the trail. So yeah, I'll go by those three: Mark, Robert, Gordon.
And you're running for Secretary of
State. Yes.
Okay.
We have two Democratic candidates for Secretary of State, right? Three? Oh, my gosh. You guys are ahead of me. Did they?
All right.
So that's something Mike and I have talked about, is the number of Democratic candidates we have. Suddenly we have this plurality, this huge number of Democratic candidates. So, Karen, let me just ask you, how does Dore handle this? Because you guys don't take sides in the primary, is that? You can endorse someone personally, but not as Dore.
Yeah, we try to invite everybody who's running for Democratic office in our area. Yeah, with our CD, the neighboring CD, the statewide offices, legislative offices, try to invite everybody to come up at some point during the campaign. We've had almost everybody of the major candidates. There's a few people. We haven't had every Senate candidate, but in short of that, we've either had everybody up or they will be up. We've got the next item on our June 3rd is our annual picnic, and the couple of candidates for statewide office that haven't made it to a breakfast, some of them because they actually are still working while trying to run for office.
We've been talking about your June picnic. Yeah. Why don't you tell folks about it while you mentioned it?
It's going to be June 3rd. It's 3:00 in the afternoon. It's going to be on the grounds of the Big Park School out in the village of Oak Creek. So we'll have a bunch of typical picnic food, sandwiches, hot dogs. Well, no hot dogs this year. Cold food.
Yeah.
Cold food this year, a sandwich buffet, sandwiches, desserts, appetizers. I invited all the candidates that are running. Hopefully a lot of them will be there. Or if they're not there, someone from their campaign will be there with information. We have people from the Save Our Schools organization. That's the anti-voucher bill, which will be on the ballot this year. We'll have somebody from Outlaw Dirty Money. We'll probably have Terry Goddard from Outlaw Dirty Money.
Yeah.
If they invest in education, people will probably have someone from that. So we'll have people for initiatives, local issues, statewide issues. And
the Dore picnic, the Democrats of Red Rocks picnic, has a great tradition.
Yeah.
I made those hot dogs and hamburgers for 20-some-odd years. I'm really not too disappointed in taking a year off.
You fired Mike from his hot dog post.
Yeah, we didn't know.
Yet one more time, one more job. Seriously, Dore is just this wonderfully active. I mean, just on background, just this wonderfully active local Democratic organization. Does the breakfast? Used to do the movies. Does the picnic? Mm-hmm. Got lots of active things going on, and it's exactly what you want out of a political organization. These guys got it going on. Since I've got the microphone, I'm going to put a plug in for my Democratic organization over in Cottonwood.
It's that kind of year, Mike.
It's that kind of year. That's right. We get the mic.
Candidates galore and organizations thriving.
We promote something, yes. Yavapai County Democrats / Cottonwood is, we just had a meeting this week. We had 50, 60 people there, and once again, several candidates. Seems like the governor candidates turned out to this particular meeting, but you might want to look for that. Dora has it all over here, but if you want to come to the poor side of town, we certainly welcome you.
Karen, what's the effect? You have a meeting like today, you have 60, 70 people there who actually hear both these candidates speak. What else does Dora do? Is there anything else you can get? Because I have a feeling that a lot of times without huge amounts of money, people don't really learn who the candidates are.
They have an office. Let me just throw that in there. That's a big deal.
Yeah, we have a permanent office there, and that's right next door to the old Sedona restaurant on the little building on the side there. We've got a permanent office. They got people there every morning. We're expanding the hours as time goes by. We've got someone coordinating PCs, the precinct committee people in both Coquina and Yavapai counties of Sedona, and also a group of other people who, for various reasons, don't want to be PCs but want to make phone calls and canvas. So they've been going out individually in groups on canvassing. We've probably got, about 30 or 40 people in that group who want to go on knock on doors.
That's great.
Make phone calls and do the one-on-one contact, which is what's really important this year.
One of the things that happened at the last meeting, as soon as somebody uses the word precinct or precinct committee, people's eyes glaze over. And I don't know why, it doesn't take a great, but anyway, it does.
Yeah.
And so all my response is always, when you talk about grassroots politics, chances are, anyway, you could be talking about many things, but one of the things you're talking about is the precinct committee person, whatever side you're on, Democrat or Republican. And they actually have a political function in the state and in most states.
Yeah, they're the ones organizing the volunteers who knock on doors. They had a canvas this past weekend specifically on behalf of the LD6 candidates, organized with information from that. We've done they've been doing circulating the outlaw dirty money petitions on some of the canvases, providing just general information on everybody running for office. What you can do, how to get involved. As the election gets closer, there'll be more of those, organized to some degree by campaigns to go out and say vote for.
So in a situation where the Democrats, like in the LD6 election, don't have a primary, they're all running for separate, then you endorse and support them right from the beginning. For these guys, you've got to wait till the primary. So let's introduce
them. Support everybody. Yeah,
because you support everybody, and then when the primary, you support whoever is elected.
Yeah, I want to direct this to the candidates as much as Karen, and that is, one of my comments, at least this morning and for the last couple of months, I've been geared toward people just coming into the political process. We know the reasons why. I mean, I see them wandering into these meetings in Cottonwood, like they're coming out of a bomb, what can we do? We need help with this. The state of the country, certainly the con man in the White House seems to bother them quite a bit.
From an alternative dimension, Sedona, that's what we think.
And the destruction of education in Arizona, is got their attention. And so we're seeing all these people that are new to politics, I think, or at least because it is confusing. CD1, LD, blah, 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 blah. And although we've explained it many times on the show, and we will continue to do so.
The 100th explanation of the Corporation Commission.
That's right.
Every year, every election, over and over again.
And the difference between LD state level and CD federal level, we will do that until our butts fall off. But right now, we're going to talk to Dr. David Brill. Is going to talk to us about why he's running.
Well, if you'd asked me a few months ago if I were going to be sitting here or running, I would have questioned your sanity. But basically, my story is I was the head of primary care for the Northern Arizona VA, so I was leading the primary care for our veterans for the last 5 years at Cottonwood and Flagstaff and Prescott and Kingman and Lake Havasu and Hopi and Navajo reservations. And every morning, just like many of you, I would be reading the latest news and fuming in my chair before going to work.
There you go.
And when I left the VA in October, I took a quick vacation, came back, asked some friends who they were finally going to run because it didn't seem like our politicians, our elected officials, were listening to us. And they pointed at me and said, "You." So I'm running out of frustration and gratitude. Mm-hmm. Now, the gratitude comes because I'm a doctor, mm-hmm. a medical doctor, not a dentist, a teacher, and I'm a businessman. I've been a senior manager. I was a medical director at Michelin Tires for three countries, Canada, the States, and Mexico. I was a senior manager at the VA, the country's largest healthcare organization, and I've founded three small businesses, one of which had three venture capitalists on it. I have lived the American dream, thanks to a great access to education. Our millennials, our Generation Zs, when I was a kid, it took 2 years at minimum wage to pay for a four-year college education. They don't have a minimum wage that's a living wage. It takes them 20 years. This is not how we invest in our children, and they are at risk of not living the American dream. I am determined to reverse that.
And that's you're running against Paul Gosar.
Correct.
One of our favorite candidates we've mentioned before.
I refer to him as our current representative.
Assume that he's sort of a whack job. What can you do? I mean, how different would you be in office?
Well, the easy answer is very different. my dad was a Methodist minister, never made, of course, much. But he was the peacemaker of the district. And what that meant was that whenever there was a church, and there were many of them in rural areas of Pennsylvania, in crisis, they would send him, and that meant they sent the family with him, so we moved around. Now, what I learned watching him was two things. He would bring the congregations to peace and then move on to another one to troubleshoot the next one. And one thing that he always did was every Monday after all the pastors, ministers, priests, rabbis had done their work on the weekend, because they work on the weekends, on Mondays, they would all get together for breakfast, and they would, talk about what was common ground for them. And, I'm a person that works common ground. I've done it in businesses in seven countries. I've worked with hundreds of elected officials. When I go to an elected official, I just sit down and say, I don't care what party you're from. I don't care if you're Republican, Libertarian, Green. I don't care. But if you care about our constituents enough to sit down and do some problem solving and make life better for them, let's get going. And that's not the way that our current representative has been working in Washington. He took pride in saying a couple of weeks ago that both Paul Ryan, his boss in the House, and Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Senate, weren't appreciative of him, shall I say. So, no, I plan to work with both sides of the aisle, but our current representative has trouble working with his own party, let alone the other one.
His own family thinks is really way, way off base. His politics have become very conspiratorial and strange. Well, running against such a bad candidate, though, Mike, you still have problems as a Democrat in a very conservative district. Mike lives in that district. I don't.
That's right. One of the things I like about David's campaign is that it's easy to hammer Paul Gosar. It really, really is. And he makes it easy. And he likes it, I think, for the same reason that Trump likes it. There's been books written about that whole negative thing. A certain segment, apparently larger than we ever imagined, of the American voter likes the... They have names for guys like that, but they're out there doing that because it's getting a lot of attention and some interest. Paul, but David is going to, and I know he tries, even though people like us want to focus on the negativity on what a jerk Paul Gosar is, we want to focus on what a great guy, the good things that David Brill's going to do. When he gets to Congress in CD4.
What are your lead issues, David?
Well, healthcare, education, jobs economy, and fair taxes. Those are the lead issues for a lot of people who wake up every day and go to work in our district. Are my kids going to have a good education? Am I $500 away from a financial meltdown? Am I going to be able to take sick leave if my kid gets sick in school, because I don't have any paid sick leave? Retirement security. I mean, now that we've given billions of dollars in tax cuts to billionaires, and the current administration has been absolutely sabotaging our health care system, insurance prices are going to rise this fall, and the current governing party has said that they are going to come after Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. since they gave those wonderfully generous tax cuts to those who really didn't need them. So those are some of the topics
I'm going
to be working
on. David.
Yes.
Give the tax cuts to the people who don't need tax cuts. That's the idea. That's the logic.
And that's what they've done here in Arizona schools. Exactly the same thing, and they're doing it in states across the country. Starve, you know, give tax breaks to the wealthy, starve the system, and then make cuts to public education or Medicare or Medicaid or whatever it is. That is the strategy, and we have to call them on the carpet for it.
When we are going to, we want to hear from Mark Gordon here next. We're going to jump around a little bit, folks, if that's all right. That's what we do. That's what we do best. But we're having a nice little chat here on Democratic Perspective with these wonderful candidates. But one of the things that people always want to know, and I like, is why? Well, why is Mark sitting in the chair in front of the microphone wanting to run for Secretary of State?
Well, I'm sitting in front of the microphone because he shoved me in this room with a stick, and he said, sit. And so I'm listening to my
He told you to put your mouth right on top of the microphone.
There you go, and I'm listening. I'm an Arizona native, and I've been working in the voting rights field for 26 years around the country. It's what I do is do election protection work. I set up election protection programs, make sure the Voting Rights Act is complied with, make sure best systems are used by election officials around the country, make sure that governments are doing what they're supposed to be doing, and make sure that barriers to voting are brought down. It's painful to say this because I love the state. I, in my 26 years, have never seen an election office anywhere in the country that's committed as many voting rights violations in such a short period of time as has our current Secretary of State, Michelle Reagan's office.
Right.
And, you know, the stakes are too high right now. It's too important. Voting rights in my lifetime, I missed the Civil Rights Movement. I was born after that. But since the Civil Rights Movement, I don't think voting rights have been under attack so greatly as they are in this country right now. And they've gotten more and more creative in the way to attack them with these policies. And then on top of that, you have a hostile foreign government that's attacked our election system. And we have a Secretary of State who's the chief election official in this state. And she's gotten up there and, you know, from her office, concerns over Russian hacking are overblown. That's not someone that's there to protect the public.
Yeah.
And, you know, blaming the six-hour lines in Maricopa County for the 2016 presidential preference election, blaming that on voter confusion is outrageous.
Yeah.
So, you know, the reason I'm running after 26 years of doing this type of work, after 33 years of, when did I begin? Yeah, I have to do math. 34 years of involvement in the political system. Since I was a kid here, I started volunteering on campaigns. I worked for Mo Udall. I worked for Al Gore. I've been around for a long time. It was time for me to step up because this particular office is a chief elections office. And at this time, when you have these kind of challenges, and a hostile foreign government on top of it attacking our system and probably others designing to do so, it calls for someone with experience to be in there. And I'm not aiming for anything else. I just want to fix the system and serve the public.
I just want to say those are two such huge things that people have trouble believing. This is America. Everybody gets to vote, you know, and there's, I think in 2018, there's nothing, almost nothing further from the truth. The barriers to voting are becoming, as you said, more creative and numerous, but still, I think, and then mention the foreign government. So those two issues, I mean, you can talk about, as far as I'm concerned, nothing else except those two issues as Secretary of State of Arizona and have a lot to say. I mean, it's just, it boggles the mind, but I'm trying to ask a question here, but I don't know where the question is. It's just that people just have so much trouble believing that in America there are these barriers to voting.
Can you give us specific examples and of voter suppression and the kind of work you have done in the past to undo that and what you plan to do as Secretary of State?
Sure.
In other words, explain to people how all this works, because maybe it's not so obvious.
Sure. A lot of people don't even know what the Secretary of State is. You know, they think that you're busy negotiating treaties around the country. On the state level.
A very attractive lady on Sunday night.
That was funny. On the state level, you know, here, it is our second highest office. We don't have a lieutenant governor, so there's that. But it is the chief elections officer. It's the chief librarian and archivist. It's the person that's supposed to be unifying the state in the first place. And not be a divisive force. I grew up, Rose Mofford was the Secretary of State here. Right? You smiled as soon as I said that. And I'll talk to Republican groups. And I said this at an event this morning, the Democratic Red Rocks breakfast this morning. You know what? I'll say the name Rose Mofford and Republican groups will smile.
Because
she wasn't there to be a Democrat. She wasn't there to be partisan. She was there to serve Arizona and just to do the job really well. And she loved the state. That's what we need to get back to. So that's what the office is. But in terms of, you know, what not to believe here, here's a good example of what happened. There was a Supreme Court decision, U.S. Supreme Court decision, a 5-4-1 called Shelby County v. Holder in 2013. And it said that the jurisdictions that had previously had this egregious history of violations of the Voting Rights Act and getting in the way of people's right to vote. And Arizona, unfortunately, was one of those states. It was Deep South. Arizona and Alaska were the principal states. There were some scattered counties around, but that's really where we're talking about. They said that the data being used from the 1980s to show that there was discrimination in Shelby County, which is Birmingham area, it was too old to apply to contemporary times, and they needed to see more recent data. So therefore, every jurisdiction under the Voting Rights Act, that paragraph was unconstitutional if you're holding those jurisdictions under federal standards by looking at old data. So that left it up to the jurisdictions to control themselves and police themselves. So what happened? Here in Arizona, our legislature, in its brilliance, cut back funding for the counties. My county, the fourth most populous county in the country, Maricopa County, cut funds for elections with the limited funds that they had. And the former county recorder decided to reduce 205 polling sites down to 60 in the fourth most populous county and one of the largest landmass counties. This is a consequence of what happens. So I'm currently the Maricopa County Democratic Party Election Integrity Director. I've been that for 5 years. I'm the one who writes a manual for the poll observers, trains poll observers, helps our attorneys, and interfaces with the government officers. And, you know, we spoke out about this as soon as the plan was made because we knew what was going to happen. Sure enough, six-hour lines. You know, and the legislature didn't speak up about it until really the legislative leadership, neither party, to be frank, until after the calamity. The Secretary of State blamed voter confusion. The governor did nothing about it. The County Board of Supervisors, the County Recorder covered their own tuchuses on it, you know, and nothing got done. So that's something. In terms of what I've done, well, Georgia, you know, they implemented it now that they're left to their own devices. They allow now armed officers of the law in polling sites.
Oh, wow.
So I got to DeKalb County, which is a heavy African-American middle class, but an African-American county in suburban Atlanta for the John Ossoff race, the expensive congressional race last summer in June. As part of the election protection lawyers team that was there. And I saw only in that county, not elsewhere, I saw an armed officer standing in the doorway.
In the doorway.
In the doorway of every single polling site that I monitored. Every single polling site inside, there was somebody behind where you pick up your election card. It's a computerized card. And where you turn it in. So, you know, I got to argue, to answer Steve's question here, I got to deal with the officers and the sheriff's office talking about the Constitution, the law, history, fairness, and I got them to stand down. I got them to disarm. They were permitted by law to be in the polling sites. I got them to stand back. And I got the ones that were standing in the doorway to go back to the cars outside the 75-foot limit. And that's where experience matters for a job like Secretary of State. You know, you can foresee problems and you can quote things from experience and history and be a forceful voice. And that's why, going back to the first question, that's why I'm running. But the stakes are very real and high. And to say that you know, it's hard for people to believe, these are two, Arizona and Georgia, two tangible examples of when you give people an inch, they'll take your voting rights. You know, and that's what they did. One more example, really quickly. Alabama. At the Alabama U.S. Senate special election that just happened. The state of Alabama was also, Deep South, was also one of those states under the Federal Voting Rights Act preclearance guidelines. The state of Alabama got very cute. They claimed that there were, because of budget cuts, they had to cut back the funding for driver's license issuing stations of the DMV. We call it the MVD here, but the DMV. Well, Alabama also has a very strict, like Arizona does, a strict voter ID law. And you can only use a driver's license issued by the DMV. Well, where do they cut back the DMV issue, the driver's license issuing stations?
Wealthy white suburbs.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that would be logical. No, every county where there was 75% or higher African American population. So it exists. These problems exist.
It doesn't take a PhD in, you know, political science to see that all of these policies are designed at limiting voting. So, I mean, my job is to talk about the obvious here. So what does all of this do? Having a uniform person, regardless of whether you have something to hide or not, is going to deter people from voting. It just is. It bothers me. And I don't, you know, I don't have any outstanding warrants.
And it's the South. It's the South. It was a little bit before my time, but, you know, the South, they stood in the doorway of people's right to vote, right, people's right to public education, people's right to board buses. It's the South still. Maybe a changing South, but it's still the South. This is still Arizona, and I love my state. But, you know, look what happened. This was the first test of what happens in a major populated center after Shelby County v. Holder, that Supreme Court decision, was the Arizona presidential preference election, our primary, in 2016. And look what happened.
Let me ask you a question. The United States seems to have a pattern of trying to keep people from voting, wherein if you go to Australia, you fine you $10 or something if you don't vote. I mean, we seem to have a whole system, and David, you could address this too. We have a whole system that seems to be making voting complicated and difficult and intimidating. When I worked with recent immigrants to the United States, they came from countries where politics was kind of a dangerous thing to do. And when they got their American citizenship, they were still intimidated about getting involved publicly in any kind of political issues. So, I mean, people react very negatively to minor things. But we have a pattern, don't we?
I think it spoke about it. You know, you take away the protection of the federal government that was there to make sure that the system was working, and these states went back to old habits. You know, in Arizona, and the guy ended up becoming U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice, eliminating people from voting rolls, challenging voters just because of their skin color or their national origin. That's why we were under federal preclearance. And here we were placing voting centers in places that were inaccessible to people of a certain socioeconomic means, and it particularly hurt people of a certain ethnic or racial background. It's unfortunate.
This undercuts the legitimacy of our elections when we do this, of our democracy. When we begin systematically, whether sneakily or not, depriving people and trying to get them not to vote, I mean, we're contributing to a damaging, Mike, of democracy in America.
There's nothing greater that you can do to damage it. We're listening to Mark Robert Gordon, a candidate for Secretary of State of Arizona. We have Dr. David Brill here today, candidate for CD4 here in northern Arizona, running against Paul Gosar. And we're talking about some really core issues here of voting rights and representing the people. It seems like that in both cases, in all cases, I guess, and whether we're talking on the federal level with, like Dr. Brill, or we're talking on the state level like Mark Robert Gordon, that there is a cutoff of those that are elected from the people that they represent. They obviously are serving other masters, or they're serving such a small segment of their population that everybody kind of shrugs their shoulders and shakes their head and say, I can't relate to these office holders.
Let's ask Karen what DOOR does to try to ensure that everybody who wants to vote, vote, and that people understand the importance of voting. Because I know people who are sort of afraid to vote. If I vote, they'll find me and I'll have to go do jury duty. Excuses like this.
The jury duty doesn't, you can be a non-voter and still be called for jury duty if you've registered a car in
Arizona.
But
there's a myth out there, Karen.
That you have to be, only vote, non-voters get called for jury duty. It used to be you registered your car and that was part of the list.
Drive all the way over to Prescott to loot money.
And there's still a lot of people. Arizona is not as bad as some of the southern states for putting in. We're not quite as bad as putting these because we do have vote by mail, which makes it easier, eliminates the 6-hour wait because the polling place is far away. It eliminates the need to present to find the ID. And if you don't have a driver's license, that can be difficult to have the right kind of ID. And the polling workers often don't know what's possible. So we have other issues there. The vote by mail, at least in Arizona, has that opportunity of people. But I know a lot of people don't trust that because they don't trust that the vote is going to get and be counted properly. And my understanding is that I don't think there's any county recorder who doesn't do that. But when the Secretary of State makes these continual mistakes on not sending out voter pamphlets, providing incorrect information, it trickles down and makes people think, well, the person I've elected in Yavapai County or Coconino County is also going to make lots and lots of mistakes. And that's not really true at that level, but it does make everybody suspicious of the whole process.
Well, very important thing is that the permanent early voting list makes it so easy to vote and numbers go up. Participation is greater. When participation is greater, the outcome of the election is more true of what it's supposed to people that are running. But when as you say, they throw in that distrust, Mark Gordon is talking about the same thing. Karen McClellan is talking about the same thing, that there is a organized effort on so many levels. And then once again, this is the other thing that people want to throw up their hands. And this is, May of an election year, and certainly people are already, I'm hearing it to some degree, the ennui, no more, enough, this constant campaigning that we have going on in the United States, and I don't have an answer to that. I'm talking myself into a corner here or something, but I'm asking.
These damn candidates. Yes. My three, guy. Yeah. I don't know why we keep having them on the show. So. I think it has something to do for them to running for offices that'll actually make a difference in people's lives.
Tabak would rather we talked about sports.
Yeah. Well, this year, of course, the things that David talked about and people's frustration means that we have had candidates coming starting, I think, last year in March of 2017, people coming that say, I'm thinking about running for governor, early on, a few other people who had already decided.
David Garcia.
David Garcia, Steve Farley, Katie Hobbs is one of the other Democrats running for secretary, all who a year and a half before the primaries practically had already decided this was their next step. Yeah. And because they would, they were seeing the frustration on people. I think some of them ran because they wanted to get people out there and tell people, hey, we are as frustrated as you are, and here are Democrats. We're running. We're not invisible. We are really here. We really have an alternative.
DOOR doesn't take a position on primaries, but you personally do, right?
Yeah,
you've endorsed a candidate.
I've endorsed candidates. You can get things on some of their websites. I've hosted.
And you separate that from being president of DOOR.
Yeah, we try on DOOR to get everybody to come. There are occasional candidates who come in late. That don't reach us and we don't always find out about them. We try to get everybody to come. And it's a value to me. I think it's wonderful that there are so many people running, that there is primaries in almost every statewide office except for attorney general and mine inspector.
Yeah.
Every other office, there are multiple.
So by primaries, there's multiple
Democrats. And there are multiple qualified people. running. They may have different views, but they all are qualified.
I think we've been very much impressed with the quality of candidates this year.
And I think that helps everybody. Nobody gets a chance to meet everybody running unless you're, a political junkie
unless
like
one
me,
of us, yeah.
Or you have people on the radio station. The average voter may go to a one meeting, one picnic, one or two fundraisers, so they meet a few people.
I really
but having
would
so
encourage
many candidates
people,
running,
Karen.
I think encourage brings the whole.
And
excitement up.
I want to talk about that. I want to talk about campaigns. I want Mark to talk about here we are, May something. What's next for the Mark Robert Gordon campaign? And David, you're going to be thinking of the same thing. What are you guys going to do? How are you guys going to win this?
Just a comment here. I wouldn't mind talking sports also. Suns just got the number one pick in the draft lottery. Come on.
Well,
I mean, they're killing me. 15 years. They can't even win one championship. Hopefully. There's hope. Now, the problem is it takes a lot of money. This is a big state, and this was a tiny population or middle population state when I was growing up here. It's a large population state. I think it's the 14th most populous state now, and it's the sixth largest landmass state. It's a big state to get around. It takes a lot of money. Yeah. So there's the catch-22. We have to. The next thing for us is we have major fundraisers now,
right.
And now for the first time, this is my first time running for office, so it takes a while to get set up and you run through some speed bumps, even though I've worked on campaigns before. But for the first time now, we have some major fundraisers, and all my networks from around the country now are starting to come through. That's what we got to focus on. And then more importantly, you need to do that so you can get your message out to the people. I love things like this morning. We got to speak to breakfast. A room. I think it was more than 60 or 70. It felt like more than 100 there.
It was big.
It was full.
I had to sit at a table far back in the back of the room where I could barely hear you guys.
You were the heckler.
I was the guy who was waving my hand and saying, vote Republican. I think those are really good points. David, what about you? You're congressional district. I mean, he's running statewide. That's humongous. State and area to cover, but your congressional district is huge.
It's pretty big. It doesn't quite cover a quarter of Arizona, but it goes from Yuma down in the southwest to Utah through Kingman and Bullhead City and so on. Then it comes down through the Quad Cities, Prescott Valley and so on, and Wickenburg over to Cottondale, Clarkdale, then over to Pine and Payson. And down into Apache Junction and Gold Canyon. So it does include a lot of the state. But what's been going on is that, our current representative has been in Congress now for 8 years. And in that time, there are many things that he has not done which have our population pretty angry, including a number of his supporters within his own party. As I go around and talk to centrist Republicans, I ask them, what has our congressman done for our district, or what do you think of our congressman? I do not get universal acclaim. So in the past few elections, this is a district where there are 2.3 Republicans for every registered Democrat. This district is 5 points further to the right than Dr. Tipernini's district next door, from which we just learned a lot about what constitutes or doesn't a blue wave and what happens when the Democrats come in with funding or don't. So, we've got important lessons to learn, but the current representative outspent his opponent by 20-1 in the last election, but he won 2-1. We anticipate, of course, he's going to have plenty of money, so we anticipate he'll outspend us 4-7-1. So obviously we have to work hard and smart. But one of the most, important things is that his stance has been to starve the federal government, even though it's a major part of the Constitution and certainly is there to protect the public welfare. What he's felt is that he is there to starve the federal government, give major tax breaks to billionaires, but when you do that, if the billionaires aren't paying it, then the lower and middle classes are. If you give a dollar to a billionaire, and that's another dollar that is not going to, that is going to have to be paid for in taxes by lower and middle classes. So the working poor or the working families that we have, many of whom are, below poverty, he has not done much for them. He has been participating in the sabotage of our health care system, so we know insurance prices, health insurance prices, are going to go up big this fall, and it's precisely because our current representative and others have been voting to dismantle our current health care system without replacing it with something better. What I'm recommending is that we take Medicare and not force it on anyone. Absolutely not force it. Let it become a voluntary player, because Medicare will come in. It's well-tested. It's stable, in contrast to our exchanges in Arizona. It is stable. Everyone can access it. It's very popular, and it's inexpensive. And my take on it is, as a capitalist who has started three companies of my own and worked in major corporations, let's let Medicare slug it out with the private sector. Let's let it be accessible to all of our working families so that they can have a voluntarily, not pushing on anybody that doesn't want it, if they want to buy into Medicare, let's let them do it.
You're talking to a dying world socialist here, but how's that? But we'll move on from that. How's that being received politically? I mean, that sounds like a middle of the road, that those centrist Republicans would like that, do they?
Well, if you poll, you know, some of the latest polls go between 70% and 90% favoring that.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, as an option, because let's face it, you know, if I'm a if you have a householder, you know, mm-hmm. a head of a household, you know, who is one medical bill away, you know, from disaster.
Like many of us are.
Yeah, like many of us are. You know, we've got to have something stable for them. And, you know, all that our current representative has basically offered are health savings accounts and letting insurance companies cross state lines. That's about all he's offered.
I was struck.
That does not save you from a $50,000. Your $500 health savings account is not going to save you from a $50,000 bill.
Yes, and there's no fundraiser that's going to get you a liver transplant.
Right.
Yep.
And I'm struck by something you said earlier, which is, it strikes me that Gosar's made no real attempt to represent the district broadly, Republicans of all spectrums, Democrats and independents. He represents really an ideology. He's obsessed with his conspiratorial ideology. And it seems like he's never, David, he's never focused on helping the district and getting it thriving. And he's never made a positive impact in Congress for our district.
Well, he's working hard right now to change that, since he has credible opponents. So he is now appearing around the district.
He's pretending
and he is,
to do yes, stuff
yeah,
now.
Yes. And he is, you know, for the first time, submitting some bills in Congress that are other than renaming post offices. So, you know, we are seeing a change already. But, yes, I agree with the statement that you just made. That
I mean,
he
in
has
the past, he hasn't even pretended, David, to really... If his mailings, when he sends them out, are all just ideological rants and crazy stuff. They're not, like, really about what he can do for the district. I mean, there's some of that, but it's very much suppressed with this obsession with his strange politics.
Well, we all have our personal values, and we all need to have the backbone to stand up for them. As Winston Churchill said, which I think was one of his more brilliant statements, all the virtues... the most important is courage, because that's the one that will give life and power to all of the others. If you don't have courage, all the others are just going to fall apart and die on the vine.
I want to reference, you just talked about a recent Democratic loss in Arizona, Dr. Tipirinini. On Stephen Colbert's show, he said, well, you know, Trump won that district by 21 points. She lost by 3 points. Mm-hmm. He says that's an 18-point gain. So if Colbert is analyzing Arizona elections, in this sort of positive light, I think we can do the same. We do. Go ahead.
And getting over to Steve's point, the fact that that our current representative is so radical and ideological does drive a number of the centrists, Republicans and independents over, in the direction of the center. And for me, no, I have my principles, I have my values, but I am absolutely in no way going to impose those, on the district. My job is to listen to people that I don't agree with and bring that into the mix, so that even if it doesn't carry the day, they're hurt.
Got it. Yes, Mark, parting remarks. We've only got a minute or two left.
Well, just going back to a thing before about involvement, Arizona became a state in 1912, and Arizona citizens, by a citizen initiative,
that's right,
gave women the right to vote.
Okay.
That was ahead of the 19th Amendment. Arizona believes in expanding the right to vote. It's in our history.
What's going on now
is just so contrary to everything.
Very good. Listen, we want to say you can listen to this show and all our shows at vbid.org. Democratic Perspective has a website, and we have our shows archived there. You can find this show and all our shows at vbid.org. Thanks, folks.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.